Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public, the list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guest today has fused bone-crunching riffs, radio-friendly hooks, and theatrical flair to become one of the most exciting acts in metal. Rolling Stone recently dubbed his group the New Kings of Occult Rock for the satanic pope guise he wears for his electrifying live performances. The garb underscores what you may call his complicated relationship with Christianity. Hailing from Sweden, where melodic craftsmanship seems to be part of the national identity, he's gone by a new name for each of his albums. He was Papa Emeritus the First, the Second, the Third, and most recently Cardinal Copia for his last record, which explored the medieval Black Plague, fittingly released just before the world was shut down for a global pandemic. He embodies the character of Papa Emeritus the Fourth on his latest album, Impera. It's a philosophically complex study of the rise and fall of empires, inspired in part by Timothy Parsons' book, The Rule of Empires, Those Who Built Them, Those Who Endured Them, and Why They Always Fall. Given the tenuous geopolitical situation at the moment, his timing seems spot on. I'm so happy to welcome the mastermind behind Ghost, Tobias Forge. The last time you wrapped a tour for your last album, which was set in the medieval time of Black Death, was just days before the world shut down for a global pandemic. And now in this time of global turmoil in Eastern Europe, you're gearing up to release an album that explores the rise and fall of empires. Your timing is certainly spot on, though I hope it doesn't set the tone for the next 2 years. There's something you said in a recent interview that I thought was so interesting and that it really comes through in your lyrics. We tend to disregard the cyclical nature of history. And today we view empires as these static, permanent things, which ignores several millennia of human history. What led you to tackle this subject on Impera?
Because it's interesting.
Good
it
answer.
But it's also current and ever current, omni current, and I think that that's why we receive the news of the world in upheaval, or let's specifically say the Western world in upheaval, with such a shock. Because it hits close to home rather than in some desert somewhere. It's fascinating, mixed with horror, obviously, because I am also, I'm just a person in the Western world who loves fucking rock music. I also need the world to function the way it does, and that has been throughout our lives. I want it to stay like that. So I don't want it to end. I want certain things to change, but ideally I want the clock to turn back to 1984 and just stay like that forever. That would be great.
I thought it was interesting that you set the album in Victorian times. What was it about that era that fascinated you? I guess the Industrial Revolution from that period probably set in motion a lot of the problems that continue to reverberate to this day.
Sometimes you just do something because it looks cool. it's just a visually pleasing time period because it has that mixture of sort of old goth mixed with industrialism. Specifically, actually, I got the idea, not for the Imperial record. I already knew that since many years back, but I got the idea, the visual idea, just in the beginning of the Prequel promo campaign. And I had a day off. No, not a day off. I had a promo day in London. And I was actually just, for some reason, I was staying up at the King's Cross or at the St. Pancras station. And
that looks like something from a horror movie.
Around there. Yeah, and I came in and I was going into St. Pancras station because there's a lot of stores there. I think I was just walking into to buy coffee or something. And I just went in. I mean, obviously, I've been there many times. I've taken the train from there to Paris many times. But I just spent a few minutes just looking up a little, just not doing anything. And I just noticed this sort of mixture between the Gothic stony church-like wall, and they had with the massive industrial ceiling, very torn. And it just walking out of there, it was just like, that's exactly what we're doing next time. Because I saw the mixture was so cool, and that once an idea like that drops, it just opens up this big branch. It just branches out very quickly in my head. And, we have presented a little bit of that on this tour, but it's going to be, I think, even more in the future.
Oh, it's so cinematic. I mean, I think I saw some of your promo in London for this album. It's projected onto some buildings there, and it looks like a movie. It's like right out of some, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula or something. I mean, it looks so cool. Something that I just appreciate about your storytelling is that it's not narrative in the strict sense with a beginning, middle, and end like a film plot, but it's more of an exploration of a given topic from all these different angles, like a variation on a theme. And you get so many interesting points of view that way. Was this album sort of almost like a warning in a way? I almost got the sense that the theme was those who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it.
If you will, yeah. I mean, I think that all of our records have been alarming and alarmist in a way. New word that everybody knows nowadays. I think that the reason why this record sounds additionally alarmist is probably because of its timing. The same way that Prequel, as you said, like had a sort of clairvoyance over it. But I think that the theme hasn't really changed much throughout the records. It's always been sort of shining a light onto the murkiness of linear religion, really linear life codes, and the destructive elements of structural religion / society. And by saying that, you cannot avoid saying political, because that's what it is. Vatican and church and the Bible was put together for political reasons
and control, a way to control
and
people.
So yes, it's all about that. It's all about that. It's never been anything about it. It has nothing to do with God or anything. It was just to control people, to control this cult that they needed to have on their side, and just made things easier. For me, it doesn't have, it wasn't like that this record felt like it was taking everything to a new direction. It was just like, you know, just I maybe you just get a little bit more poignant or with age or with age or rage, you just get a little bit more like to the point. But thematically, it doesn't really differ much from the first two records. The first being obviously a little bit more fictitious and a little bit just like throwing fun words into play. But the second one where lyrics were a little bit more realistic, if you will. I don't want to say that, but it's, you know, there was always like an ambiguity between, you know, the fictional world of interesting Latin-based words that you sort of associate with the with goth and death metal and all that, but also had an undertone of something street in there. But if you want to, you can just turn it around. If you're one of those people who are like, yeah, well, you know, rock band shouldn't talk about fucking politics. You can just easily see it for what it is. It's 40 minutes of rock music. It's just a fucking rock record. That's what we do. We play rock music and then we go out on tour. That's what we do.
I mean, these songs, they just sound so enormous. I mean, they sound custom made to be played at stadiums. At what point in your writing process do you begin to think of an audience? Are you thinking early on as you're putting, you know, the riffs together and writing the track, how they'll respond and how it'll go over on stage? Or does that come later? And in the beginning, are you just kind of emoting?
I think as any architect that you will at some point, even at, when you're creating your idea, think of practical things. Like this giant slab of concrete cannot float in thin air. Mm. Or can it? You know, yes, it can. If we hide this underneath it, it will look like it's floating in thin air. But you don't just disregard the fact that a giant concrete slab will fucking not just elevate. And that is... You do think about that when you're writing songs. If you are a band, if you write songs to be performed, there will be at some point a practical evaluation of the track. How does this work out? How do we play this? How will it sound? How will this translate? Is this understandable? It's just but I did grindcore bands as well. You ergonomically need to figure the song out to make it feel a certain way, and that's what's arranging songs and for an ensemble is. It's to how to coordinate it to be performed, and you know, most bands do, and I mean even. I don't know if the Shags had a like a end goal with, because it sounded like they did. They just started making noise, and that became entertainment as well. So it's you don't always have to if you don't want to, but if the expectancy is for people to show up and dance along to your music, it will greatly benefit if you sort of have that in mind.
I love that you just referenced the Shags. I love that album so much.
Yeah, me
it's
too.
So good.
But it's the utmost perfected manifestation of exactly the opposite of everything I spoke of. I mean,
it's an endurance test to listen to. For anyone listening right now who hasn't heard that, check it out. They are a group of, I think, teen girls in the late 60s who I think their father had a vision, if I recall, that they that God wanted them to be in a band. And so he gave them instruments without really instructing them. And it's just pure, it's punk, maybe 12 years early, I guess, is a way of thinking about it. It's definitely, it's an interesting sound.
It's phenomenal.
So, yeah.
But it definitely sounds like they just pressed the record button and then they took up the instruments for the first time in their lives. And me and my daughter sits and listen to that in the car all the time.
No way.
My friend Foot. It's Halloween. And it...
But it's pure.
But it's impossible. Even if you're somewhat musical, it's still like completely not, you cannot sing along to it. You can just mimic the sounds and just sort of like, sort of do wonky moves. And, but it's entertainment. And that is what music is, regardless if you're listening to fucking Yes or the Shags. It's meant to entertain you. So they did exactly that.
Yeah.
They wanted to be rock band and they played rock music to make people smile. And they do. They still do. And that's 55 years ago, whatever. You know, so that's pure as well.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
We said, starting this conversation, you just wrapped the first leg of your tour playing. I know you opened the show with Kaiserian and played a lot of songs from the new album that's not out yet. What was the feedback like from the crowd on these new songs that in a lot of cases they had never heard before?
Hunter's Moon is obviously have been out for quite a while. So that really feels like one of our like regulars now. Kaiserian was, I mean, I know, not to sound fucking cocky or anything, but you know, I knew that was a good song and it's a big opener. So it's like, I knew that people will like it. People should like it. Therefore we're playing it. And, but we already knew beforehand that people were going to be a little bit non-responsive, if you will, the same way that they were to Spirit when we started playing that on the Meliora cycle before the album came out, the same way that people reacted to Paraspera and in Fairy, sorry, we just say Paraspera. So I haven't said the full title in 10 years. We did that as well. So we've done that so many times, like coming out on stage on a new cycle with a big opener on a record that you haven't heard yet. So it's almost like a tradition. And it always turns into the same sort of, deer in headlights sort of situation in the beginning. And then when we go from the first song into Rats, all of a sudden the crowd sort of comes alive. But that's fine. They'll learn.
You mentioned Hunter's Moon. I meant to mention this earlier. I want to congratulate you for having that in the soundtrack to the latest Halloween movie, Halloween Kills, over the end credits, which is like prime soundtrack spot. That must have been a cool moment for you as a big horror fan.
Of course, yeah. I don't know what to say more than that. Of course, it was a big thing. I've always been, ever since I was a kid, watching these films, and you sort of notice the connection. Big examples of that was obviously Man Behind the Mask and Friday the 13th, 6, was it? Yeah, or something like that. And I've always been in awe of horror film music, but the way that a lot of rock bands were associated with the horror, I liked Night of the Living Dead. Obviously, was no Return of the Living Dead. Sorry, Return of the Living Dead, the 80s sort of comedic horror film. Obviously had this great display of a lot of cool rock and punk bands. So that was always something that I wanted to do, which is cool.
I say, could you ever follow in the footsteps of like John Carpenter and see yourself writing a script for a horror movie or something like that?
I'm very interested in the cinematic world. I don't know if I were given the carte blanche to sort of go in headfirst into cinema, I don't know if horror films would be my first go to actually.
Oh, interesting. What?
I am a giant fan of horror, but that would not be my first. I am more of a, if I were to make films, it would be more in some weird universe between Lynch and with a quirky and gothic sort of little shadow of Lynch, but in the quirkiness of Wes Anderson and more of the Coen brothers. So more comedic, but anything could happen sort of mixture between everything. I'm way more like a mishmash sort of person.
See a little bit of John Waters in there too. I feel like I can see a little bit of that.
Maybe, yeah. But never. I don't think I would ever go into like full on horror just for the sake of it being scary. It would be, but in a film by me, it would definitely, like, if someone died, it would be like in a horrifically bloody way, just because that would be a fun way to sort of just incorporate an element of splatter. But the story itself would be sort of comedic, tragic, and romantic in some sort of weird fairy tale of complete unreal dude-ism.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public, the list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.
Hearing you talk about the kind of ideal movie you would like to make, I'm so interested in just your incredibly diverse influences. I love that you close your shows with Emmylou Harris's Sorrow in the Wind, which is not something that, you know, people would traditionally associate with you know, hard rock and roll and metal. I know you've cited people like Blue Oyster Cult, and you play a Metallica cover on this recent tour, but you've also cited Tori Amos and Andrew Lloyd Webber as influences. What is it about someone like Andrew Lloyd Webber who really inspires you? Somebody that I wouldn't have automatically thought would be an influence of yours.
Because he writes hit songs. I think that there are several, what do you call, like YouTube profiles that likes to make, you know, musical versions of anything. And even though that they are joking, I think that there are a lot of musicals that are written that way because people think that if you were in a musical, you talk like this and you point over there. And it's so bad that I you know, I just want to puke. Unfortunately, a few films that have been made like as musicals are also like insanely bad, even when it's people that I would expect to do better. And whereas Andrew Lloyd Webber has done, it's like normal talking, and then all of a sudden they erupt into a song. And when they erupt into a song, it's Memories or Music of the Night, Phantom of the Opera, the song. That's our fucking, they are fucking smash hits. So if you're making theater or and it goes into musicals and I prefer it when like each track is like a banger. It needs to be like a real proper standalone song from the radio, and that's what separates his music so much from the standard musical, because a lot of the standard musical are very generic. It's a style of music, which to compare it to horror films, and this is where if I were to talk about not the horror genre in general, where that sort of comes in different time periods and all that, but because there are a lot of Italian and 80s horror that I like for maybe different reasons than saying that the films are great. They might be entertaining, but they might not be great cinematic crafts. Whereas the best cinematic films, the best horror films I know are made by people who, or creators who aren't necessarily into making horror in the first place. And, you know, the horror aficionado would say, that's not a horror film. Yes, they are. So The Exorcist, Jaws, Shining, Dracula from 1992, one of my favorite films of all time. All of these films are one of my favorite films of all time, but they were all made by people who normally does not do horror. And that's what make them so great, because they take all the horror and all these elements that they turn it into the best horror film they can ever muster, with drama and, humor and comedy and romance and really deepened like a character materialization, if you will, or whatever. But and whereas so much of the crap of horror is because they are made by people who just watch horror, who became filmmakers to make horror. So it's all just a regurgitation of the genre. And that's the same thing with a lot of heavy metal and death metal and all that. It's just like, it's just repeated, indulgent sort of, homaging, which is not the foundation that you want to build on if you want to take the genre forward or add anything valuable to it. You're just echoing it. And I think it's the same thing with a lot of musicals, that some people are just so fascinated with the format that anything that resembles that just qualifies that, because it's just the sound of a musical. How are you? You, I'm standing here. How about yourself? Are you not? And it's, I hate that. I absolutely fucking hate shit like that. It's horrible. And But that's why Andrew Lloyd Webber seemed to be like very much like Stanley Kubrick. I think he listens to a lot of other things. And then he writes a musical here and there.
And that's such a beautiful way to get back into all of your influences too. I mean, on a track like Spillways, that piano part, I mean, that could be, you know, something straight out of ABBA or something like that too. And it's so beautiful when juxtaposed with these huge heavy riffs too. I love that interplay. And to have all these influences come together, it's its own unique thing. Like you said, it's not just, you know, regurgitation from what became before and just because you're so in love with that genre. It's all the things that you love and you've built something new out of it. And that's what is amazing with what you do, in particular with this new record. I really think that comes across.
Yeah, well, speaking of regurgitation to the point where it's almost vomiting onto myself, actually, would be my constant whacking off over ABBA, which you sort of shone a little light on there, because I've found myself constantly sort of trailing them, not only because I'm a big fan, but how we have sort of ended up in the same studios as they have. And that has been sort of a little bit of a thing where, you know, Impera was recorded in Studio Atlantis, which back in the day, if you start looking through the records, you will see that it was called Metronome back in the day. And that's where ABBA recorded most of their big hits. And if you go online, kids, and you see the clip where ABBA is recording Dancing Queen, that's exactly the studio that we recorded Impera. And the same mixing console, the same gadgets in the background, the same microphones, everything. Wow. And I have to confess, it's the same piano.
No
and
way.
It's the same marimba. Yeah, and it's the same big concert, boom, 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 on the record that they had on Money, 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 for example, I think it was. And Mamma Mia was recorded there. It's the same thing. So it's during the recording, it was always like a little bit of that vibe. You know, you have to go over to the marimba and play Mamma Mia. And later this year, not to go into any detail about it, but we went into another studio to record something else. And that was the studio where they recorded the album. So that would be Take a Chance on Me, and Eagle was in that studio. And then to make things even more funny, as like almost like a little time lapse, was the fact that we recorded Meliora in Benny Anderson's own studio. Where they after us recorded the new ABBA record.
Wow.
But yeah, we've shared studios three times with ABBA.
I've heard that you're already got your eye towards the next project, chapter six, whatever that may be. Do you have any hints of what's to come?
No. I won't give that away yet.
Understood. Oh, Tobias, thank you so much for your time today. I want to take up too much more of your time, but it has been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time and your music.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing.
This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public, the list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.